Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents HBR Guide to Office Politics by Karen Dillon. Narrated by Lisa Ivory.
What you'll learn. Every organization has its share of political drama. Personalities clash, agendas compete, turf wars erupt. It can make you crazy if you're trying to keep your head down and get your job done. The problem is, you can't just keep your head down. You need to work productively with your colleagues, even the challenging ones, for the good of your organization and your career. How can you do that without crossing over to the dark side? By acknowledging that power dynamics and unwritten rules exist, and by constructively navigating them. Politics needn't be a dirty word. You can succeed at work without being a power grabber or a corporate climber, and the expert advice in this guide will help. You'll get better at building relationships with difficult people, gaining allies and influencing others, working through tough but productive conversations, wrangling the resources you need, moving up without ruffling feathers, dealing with the boss's pet, coping with office bullies and cliques, claiming credit when it's due, avoiding power games and petty rivalries, collaborating with competitive peers. Introduction. Every office is political. For years, I naively thought I worked at a place that wasn't. I saw our office as more or less fair, more or less healthy, and highly inclusive, perhaps overly so, in decision-making. People competed with themselves, I'd proudly tell prospective recruits, not with one another. And I meant it. All those good things I believed, they were true, but only to a point, I realize with hindsight. We competed with ourselves, but also with one another. Our bosses had favorites, and we noticed. We grumbled about promotions that didn't seem deserved, assignments that didn't seem fair. People subtly found ways to elbow one another out of pole position for C-suite attention. Our office was political. Of course it was. In a 2011 survey by the UK-based management consulting firm Revelation, 95% of respondents said that manipulation and hidden agendas in the workplace had affected them personally. So, you're in good company if these issues make you crazy. Maybe you're plagued by an office bully who constantly questions what you're doing and undermines you in meetings. Or a boss who pits you against your peers. Or a clique that wields an inordinate amount of organizational power. Perhaps you've even encountered backstabbing, one-upsmanship, or shifting alliances. You can't escape politics, no matter what your role or function. That's what Frankie James, founder of OfficePolitics.com, has learned from the professionals around the world sharing their struggles on her website. It's inevitable, even if you're self-employed. If you're dealing with clients, James says, you're dealing with their office politics, too. You have to make them look good. You have to understand the dynamics behind the scenes for them. Does that mean you have to fight fire with fire? Connive and scheme? Get your blows in faster? No. As the experts and consultants cited in this guide argue, you can weather and even participate in politics without selling your soul. They base this observation on research, their work with clients, and abundant personal experience. And it's supported by the many examples, real but disguised, I've included throughout. So, what's the solution? It's about being constructively political, understanding personal dynamics among colleagues, working together for mutual advantage, and ultimately focusing on the good of the enterprise. What happens if you simply do what's asked of you and mutter about colleagues who curry favor? Executive coach Beth Weisenberger, co-founder of the Handle Group, says you're doing yourself in. She's seen it happen again and again in her years of coaching. Those who try to stay completely out of the political fray are less likely to meet their job and career goals than those who engage. So, she advises her clients to stop getting worked up about the unfairness of it all and build their own positive relationships with colleagues who will help them do their jobs well. Ron Ashkenas, a managing partner at Schaefer Consulting, agrees. As he puts it, "It's easy to use politics as an excuse for a lack of achievement or an outlet for your frustration. But it's a lot more effective to use politics as a way to get things done. This guide will help you do that. It's not realistic to assert that you can make all of your work relationships warm and fuzzy. Let's face it, there are people you'll work with who are just jerks, and no amount of advice can change that. But not having a strategy for dealing with them can definitely make things worse. And you can control much more than you might assume. Here are some common themes you'll notice throughout. Question your reaction. When people appear to be playing political games, we often think we know their motives, but sometimes we're off the mark. Step back and reevaluate. What else could be driving the behavior? Maybe it's not as vengeful as it seems, or even intentional. Try removing yourself from the equation. Everybody brings her own quirks, worries, and stresses to work. What you assume is a personal attack may have absolutely nothing to do with you. Accept that not all conflict is bad. Great performance can come out of being challenged by an aggressive colleague or being forced to collaborate with someone who you can't stand. We can and often do rise to challenges. Don't assume uncomfortable means bad. Take charge of your fate. Even if the playing field isn't level, you'll accomplish little by complaining about it. Assume responsibility for your progress. Don't give your manager and others any reason to dismiss you as a whiner. Keep your cool. Office bullies and other game players win every time they see they've rattled you. Never give them that satisfaction. You'll just perpetuate the problem. Stay composed, and they'll lose their power. When asked to write this guide, I jumped at the chance. Since I understood the challenges people faced, I'd approach it with empathy. But secretly, I also felt a little smug. I thought I'd successfully navigated most political scenarios in my career. Then, after interviewing about 20 experts and synthesizing their advice on the various dilemmas, I recognized several mistakes I'd made over the years. Stewing over injustices, fighting the wrong battles, making things personal when they didn't need to be. Now, looking back at those moments, I wish I'd done my research sooner. It's never too late to learn, though. Thank goodness for that. So what's the main takeaway, if I had to boil it down to one? As organizational development and HR expert Susan Heathfield puts it, don't try to be the boss's pet. Be everyone's pet. That is, devote your energy to being a terrific employee and colleague. You'll find that you're less preoccupied with all the jockeying that's going on around you and more focused on positive pursuits like performance, growth, and fulfillment. Section 1. Political Challenges with Your Boss. Chapter 1. The Boss Who Holds You Back. The Problem. You've been quietly showing your boss the ropes for a long time. He relies on you heavily for help with everything from interpreting monthly reports to sizing up market demand to placating cranky stakeholders. Yet only his name appears on the emails that update higher-ups on your projects. You feel like the stagehand behind the curtain. You're running the show, but he's the one out front, taking a prolonged bow. Why it happens? When the person who should be your organizational guide and cheerleader keeps your smart contributions under wraps, of course you don't feel valued. Even if he's not intentionally undermining you or holding you back, it's hard to stay motivated. After all, you know your efforts will go unrecognized. Some bosses simply don't like sharing the spotlight. Others get nervous when their shortcomings are thrown into sharp relief by a direct report's strengths. You may run into this problem with a boss who is new to his job, for example, and feels threatened by your deep organizational knowledge and close internal ties. Or perhaps your manager inherited you in a merger or a reorg and has discovered that you bring critical new skills to his team, skills everyone assumed he already had. What to do about it? You may fantasize about changing jobs, but you probably won't have to resort to that. You can improve your day-to-day relationship with your manager, but you'll need to lead the transformation. Own the problem. Jessica Price-Jones, CEO of the UK-based leadership consultancy Eyeopener and author of Happiness at Work, says people are often too quick to dub a work relationship a failure before taking their share of responsibility for fixing it. How can you do your part? Remember that your boss wants to succeed in his job as much as you do in yours. That will help you adopt a constructive mindset so that you can move beyond your frustration and improve the dynamic. Think about what you share with your boss rather than what divides you. If you have only transactional conversations, Price-Jones says, you're unlikely to warm to each other. But looking for personal similarities will make it easier for you to connect professionally. Did you grow up in the same area? Do you admire the same people? Finding common ground will help you interpret events and interactions more positively. Are there reasonable explanations for what you perceive as negative signals? Maybe your boss appears to be shutting you out of critical meetings with his boss, for instance, but it's really because one-on-ones feel more efficient to him, not because he wants to keep you from growing and advancing. Branching out. Alexei's story. What happened? I had a dive bomb manager. He'd disappear for weeks with very little contact until he got wind of some project I was involved in. Then he would swoop in and demand reports, details, every scrap of information he could get. These urgent requests came in the form of rat-a-tat emails arriving at 10 p.m. or later. Often he'd take my responses to board meetings, passing off the work as his own. Then he'd lecture me on the need to keep him in the loop. What I did. I tried to keep my boss informed, but he'd ignore my updates and still somehow be taken by surprise. So I found myself pointing him to emails or memos I'd sent weeks earlier, which just annoyed him. I started to feel cut off from the rest of the organization, so I reached out to managers above him, asking if I could help with their cross-functional initiatives. That way, when he came back and demanded to know what was going on, I could say, so-and-so signed off, and he'd have to drop it. I also began to let people know what ideas and contributions were mine, because he was taking credit for everything. I copied key people on my email updates to him, spoke up more in meetings, made casual comments that showed my depth of knowledge, and attached my name to documents I created for him. Did Alexei get it right? It's hard to strike a healthy balance with an alternatively indifferent and needy boss who shuts you off from others. Alexei was smart to put his name on his contributions and form alliances with other senior managers. Otherwise, he'd have remained isolated and resentful. But it probably wasn't the best idea to go behind his paranoid boss's back or over his head. That just fed the perception that he couldn't be trusted with independence and visibility. Once you're open to his point of view, you can begin treating him as you'd like to be treated. Find genuine opportunities to make him look good. Tell someone he respects, perhaps one of his peers, about an insight he shared with you or something he accomplished that you admired, Price-Jones suggests. And express your appreciation after he helps you meet an important goal or solve a tough problem. You don't need to be effusive. Just sincerely acknowledge what he's done for you. At the very least, you'll lower his defenses. Best case, you'll set a gracious example that he wants to follow. Tap his former direct reports. If you can easily get in touch with someone who used to work for your boss, invite her out for coffee. You may already know someone who managed the relationship effectively if you've been in the organization for a while. Otherwise, you might need to rely on friends to discreetly point you in the right direction. Explain that you're eager to develop in your role and that you'd like to pick her brain about her experience working with and learning from your boss. Pitch it as a tutorial for you, not as a gripe session. See if she can share insights about his mentoring style, for example, and tips on how to earn his trust so that he'll feel comfortable giving you stretch assignments and placing you on cross-functional teams. Even if you feel safe confiding in this person, assume that anything you say could make its way back to your boss, and edit yourself accordingly. If the former report has only bad news for you, your boss really is a jerk. At least you're forewarned. You know it's not personal to you, and that someone else understands what you're going through if you need a sympathetic ear. Katie, a research scientist, names and details are disguised in examples throughout this guide, suffered for several years under a supervisor who treated her with contempt. Katie had been recruited into her plum position by her boss's boss, so she assumed that her boss resented her for that reason. Not wanting to make waves, she kept quiet and tried to do a good job. But then a chance conversation with one of his former direct reports led her to realize that the guy didn't hate her. He was generally a bad manager and grumpy guy. That gave Katie the courage to stand up to him in one-on-one meetings. "It was so helpful to realize that it wasn't just me," Katie recalls. "I stopped taking it personally and started thinking about how to get him to back off instead." Network with his peers. Make sure your manager's peers know how hard you work and how much you care about the company. If your boss isn't giving you opportunities to demonstrate that to others, you'll need to do it by slowly building your own relationships with people in a position of influence, says INSEAD leadership professor Herminia Ibarra. Start by getting to know a couple of people outside your immediate group, as presented in Chapter 16, Forging Alliances. The relationships can be casual, based initially on chit-chat about movies or hobbies, or you can ask for formal introductions. Do a 6 degrees of separation exercise if you can't think of an easy way to connect. Who in my circle can introduce me to this person? One ally isn't enough, even if it's someone with lots of power. No matter how well placed that person is, your boss can damage your reputation with others in the company if you've got no one else in the senior ranks looking out for you. Paula learned this the hard way. She emerged from a massive corporate reshuffle with her job intact and a new manager, Liz. Though Liz needed her expertise to get up and running, things between them quickly got rocky since Paula clearly had the CEO's ear. When the CEO asked Paula to handle a project for him on her own, Liz went into attack mode, criticizing her in public meetings, finding fault with her data. Paula saw the CEO's support as guaranteed job security, so she continued to work around Liz at his behest. But over time, Liz chipped away at her reputation, and the CEO's confidence in Paula eroded. She was eventually fired from the company. Had Paula forged ties with a few influential people a level or two up, says leadership consultant Ron Ashkenas, she would have been less vulnerable to Liz's steady campaign against her. Confront him. If you haven't managed to subtly change the dynamic with your boss, it might be time to speak openly with him about the problem. It's a risky move, but it could be your last best chance to fix the situation, says Ashkenas. Don't have this conversation if you aren't prepared to switch jobs. It could backfire if your boss really does have it in for you. But in a case like that, you wouldn't want to stick around anyway. Approach your boss in the most constructive way possible. Let him know that you're on his side. Say you want to find better ways to support him. No good will come out of sulking with your arms folded or ranting about how unappreciated you are. Even if that's true, your boss won't respond calmly to that. He'll get defensive. After you've set a positive tone by putting his needs front and center, make it clear that you're looking to grow, too. Explain that you're hoping to do that within the organization, ideally with his guidance. But say you'll also consider outside opportunities after a certain amount of time has passed. Offer a reasonable time frame, maybe a year. To give him something concrete to work with, describe your big-picture professional goals and how you envision getting there. Suppose, for instance, you're eager to build your analytical skills. Volunteer to take on assignments that will require you to gather and interpret data. For example, you might comb through customer renewal rates to see if there are any patterns worth discussing. Ask your boss if he has other suggestions for developing those skills in your current role, or if he'd recommend ways to get other senior managers in the company to see you in a new, high-potential light. Of course, once your cards are on the table, be prepared for things not to go your way. But at least you'll have given yourself and your boss every opportunity to right the course. Chapter 2. The Boss Who Pits You Against Your Colleagues. The Problem. Your boss has you competing against your peers for her respect and attention. It's a reindeer game scenario. Only one of you can win some coveted prize, whether it's the chance to lead a team, get a promotion, or just have a moment in the limelight. She has created a horrible, cutthroat environment for an otherwise collegial group of direct reports. Why it happens. Though some bosses don't realize they're creating this problem, in many cases it's a deliberate management tactic. Task several people with solving a business challenge and make it an implicit horse race. Even when a promotion isn't on the table, senior executives often leave roles and responsibilities ambiguous as a test. They want to see who can take the pressure, who will rise to the occasion, who wants to get ahead badly enough to throw some sharp elbows. Retaliation. Andrea's story. What happened? I worked in a small organization where two of us had the same title but very different jobs in practice. Our boss didn't see a problem with the ambiguity, but it created tension. I managed a team of people. My peer didn't manage anyone, but she had significant influence. She took every opportunity to undermine me by bad-mouthing me to my team. My direct reports would defend me, but it was rattling for them. In many cases, they'd come to me to tell me what was happening. What I did. I told my boss, and he said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." I assumed he spoke to her, because for 2 or 3 months the behavior disappeared. But then she began sending around nasty emails about me, sometimes inadvertently copying me. Here's the really bad part. I figured out that people like that can be manipulated because they're convinced that others are actively working against them. So it was easy to fight back. I'd say things like, "I saw the owner of the company today, and we had a really good chat." That would freak her out. It implied that I was having some kind of exclusive conversation with the big boss. I wasn't, but she didn't know that. Ultimately, her behavior got out of control, and she unspooled publicly. She got fired around the same time I left the company. Did Andrea get it right? Andrea was effective, but at great cost to her colleague and herself. She allowed herself to slip down to her colleague's level, and it didn't make her any happier, just guiltier. She would have felt better taking a higher road, calling her colleague on the bad behavior, and asking her boss to create more distinct job titles and descriptions to clarify their responsibilities. Abraham Lincoln famously assembled a team of rivals. He harnessed their competitive energy to bring out the best in each member and to produce the greatest results as a group. Bosses do the same. In some industries, such as investment banking and consulting, it's even considered a rite of passage, observes leadership consultant Jessica Price Jones. The boss thinks, "I made my way to the top through healthy competition, so why shouldn't you?" What to do about it? An environment like this is frustrating for both you and your peers, and it can actually harm performance. When people focus intensely on beating one another out, they inevitably lose sight of larger goals and the greater good. Here are some ways to establish a friendlier, more collaborative dynamic, even when your boss, knowingly or not, sets the stage for conflict. Make a pact. You and your colleagues can find your own ways of working together that don't ratchet up the competition. Leadership consultant Catherine Heath figured this out early in her career when an indifferent boss unwittingly set up a rivalry between Heath and a coworker. "We were in two different areas," Heath recalls, "but we needed to work together. Our boss didn't make roles and decision rights clear for us, so we had to sort them out ourselves." The colleague wanted to take the lead, just tapping Heath for whatever support he needed. But Heath didn't intend to play a supporting role. In fact, her colleague relied on resources she controlled. Rather than engage in passive-aggressive games, Heath decided to have a straightforward discussion with him about how they could work together on a level field. It was a tough conversation, she recalls, because we were held accountable for different things. They tried to keep emotion out of it by focusing on coming to an understanding that would benefit both of their teams. We came up with a detailed plan for how we'd handle certain situations, and we agreed to not make any big commitments or moves without talking to each other first. It wasn't a perfect solution, but by dealing with the issue directly, they diffused what could have been an incendiary relationship. Establish ground rules, advises Susan Heathfield, an organizational development and HR expert. What if your colleague is playing dirty by one-upping you in meetings, for example, or leaving you out of the loop so that you'll look clueless? Describe exactly what you see him doing and ask him to stop. You may not feel comfortable confronting him, but work up the courage to do it. He'll be more likely to play fair in the future because he probably doesn't enjoy confrontation any more than you do. He usually gets away with his behavior, says Heathfield, so it's key to call him on it. If you allow it to continue unchecked, that trains him to do it more often, or to more of an extreme. Call a timeout. You don't have to duke it out just because your boss has thrown you and a colleague in the ring. You can refuse to fight. Mary Davis Holt, one of Heath's partners, learned this in a past job, but not as soon as she'd have liked. Her boss had put her on a project with someone without making clear assignments, and it created conflict. Though Holt and her colleague had sat down in the beginning to sort out who would do what, over time she realized that she had allowed herself to do 80% of the work while her colleague was happy to claim credit for leading the effort. I probably should have recognized the imbalance earlier, she says, but I was so eager for the next promotion, I wanted to show my willingness to go with the flow and be a flexible team player. The more she put up with, the more she saw her colleague as an adversary. In hindsight, what does she wish she'd done? Though she's glad she didn't let her anger erupt into a nasty fight over division of labor, she says, I should have asked my boss to clarify our respective responsibilities right away. Once she spoke up and her boss realized what he'd set in motion, he agreed to step in to better divide the tasks. Manage up. Tell your boss how you feel about the situation, but be diplomatic and constructive. If she thinks you're grousing, she won't take your concerns seriously. Or she might conclude that you have difficulty getting along with others, as presented in Chapter 4, The Boss's Pet. Discuss it with your colleague first, advises Heathfield, and then meet with your boss, perhaps together. Say you'd both like to stop vying for the spotlight because it's distracting you from doing your best work. Ask if she can avoid putting you in competitive situations, and give a few examples in case she's not tuned in to the competition, so that you can both be more productive, to the benefit of all. Some bosses think fostering internal competition helps them identify the truly talented, like some kind of Darwinian gauntlet, says Price Jones. She recently advised a junior investment banker who faced that problem. His boss tried to pit him directly against another colleague. Whoever had recommended the best-performing investments by the end of 6 months would be the winner. The prize? The boss's favor and job security. So the fledgling banker approached his boss with a different idea. Could he and his colleague work together to come up with the best picks? He identified reasons that would be better for the company, citing research about the benefits of collaboration. The boss agreed to try the experiment, and he's been pleased with the results. In Price Jones's experience, this example isn't an outlier. Most bosses are open to trying a different tack, she says, especially when you say, here's how you could get more out of me. Chapter 3, The Control Freak Boss. The problem. Your boss is smothering you. At first, you thought, it's because I'm new. That's why he insists on reviewing every document before I distribute it and sitting in on all my meetings. But now that you're no longer learning your role, the tight leash feels downright oppressive and embarrassing. The other day, he actually scolded you for having a hallway chat with one of his peers about an idea you've been kicking around. You're hard-working, competent, smart,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?